You're listening to The Running Ground with Joseph T. Welcome back, and thanks again for tuning in. Hope everyone's staying healthy, staying safe, and grinding. You know, whatever dream it is you're chasing, whatever goal it is you're pursuing, just keep grinding. And remember, mindset is everything. Finally, we're getting some consistent cooler weather here in Houston. It's definitely making the runs more enjoyable for everyone down here. I honestly can't believe next week is Thanksgiving. Like, we're almost at the end of 2023. I mean, radio stations are playing Christmas music already. It's wild. The year just flew by. But for my Houston folks, we are less than 60 days away from the Chevron Houston Marathon, one of my favorite races and an annual event for me personally that I've done almost every year beginning in 2010. I think I missed the 2013 race, which was the race known as the cold one and the downpour early in the morning. Unfortunately, I came down with the stomach bug and just couldn't hold down food the night before, so that wasn't happening, but I guess it worked out because I heard that race to begin with was kind of miserable. But this coming January, I'll be doing my fourth Chevron Marathon, my third live Chevron, as 2021 was the virtual COVID year. But I'm excited to tackle this course and hopefully overcome the rolling hills that is Allen Parkway that are just cruelly placed at mile 22 through 24. I always say I'm doing Chevron until I can dominate the hills and not have those hills dominate me. But the goal is to break 3:30, which is my current PR. And if I'm having a really good day, hopefully get into the 3:25 range or better. You know, after running the Whistle Stop Marathon in Wisconsin last month, I'm going to run this race different than I have in the past. Part of me feels like I was giving myself way too much credit and thinking I'm way faster than I really am. At Whistle Stop, I was trying to go 7:45 for the first 10 miles, then drop down to the 7:35 for the next 10, and 7:25 for the last 10K. I was on point through mile 13, and then I wasn't. I just saw the time go in the opposite direction and got slower and slower each 10K. Heart rate was way too high, and the lactic acid was building up almost from the start, so just not a great recipe. I ran my first two marathons in similar fashion and had the same results, so I'm switching it up, man. All those races ended up being positive splits, which is definitely not what I'm going for and shouldn't be doing. I don't think I'm at that point to keep it even splits all the way through 26 miles, so I'm going to slow it down even more and hopefully hit negative splits this go around. But I'm really going to slow it down to like an 8-minute pace the first 10K and just kind of cruise, try to stay aerobic, keep that heart rate under 160 as much as possible, then shift down to like a 750 for miles 7 through 20 and hopefully have enough in the tank to go 740, 745 for the last 10K. I'm really going to try to stay aerobic as much as possible through that first half and then hopefully have enough in the tank to take that second half a lot faster. We'll see. As always, if you like the content, please share us with your friends and follow us on Instagram at the.grind.effect. For brand apparel and new designs, you can go to our website at thegrindeffect.net. Again, if you could all do me a favor and rate the podcast, do a quick review. It really helps with these algorithms that the platforms use and just really helps me in the show out. Thank you to all the followers and subscribers. Your support definitely means a lot, and hopefully I continue doing these episodes. Today we chat with Houston local, but not Houston native, Christine Mulvaney, who I was just as shocked to find out it's pronounced Mulvaney, because spelling-wise, I'm sure we all say Mulvania, but her and I connected through the gram maybe 2 years ago, just because we all shared similar running friends, but her and I didn't even meet in person till the Houston half just a few weeks ago. She always seemed like a cool personality on social media, and meeting her in person, she's really got a fun personality to her, and just a great vibe that I think really comes through on this episode. We hit a variety of topics along with her run journey that really proves the saying, you don't know what battles people are fighting, so be kind to everyone. But you know, she's lived quite the life of both adventurous and heartbreak. She's been through a lot, from living in Germany to picking up running as a way to support and honor her mom, to dealing with her own health issues that greatly impacts her life and, you know, her family. She's got a really amazing story to tell, and I'm honored I got to be the one to help her share it. So sit back and let's run with Christine Mulvaney.
Welcome to The Running Grind, a podcast dedicated to finding the story behind your journey, presented by The Grind Effect. It's a lifestyle, it's a state of mind, it's a reminder that success, your success, doesn't always come easy. And here's your host, Joseph D.
I think this is going to be your fourth marathon, third marathon.
Philly will be my fourth, and then Chevron will be my fifth. And I mean, yeah, you caught me at like a good time in my running journey, because it's been 10 years, I think.
It's been 10 years already.
Mm-hmm. I started running when I was 30.
Yeah. Well, before we get started, I got to ask you, Mulvania, what nationality is that?
Oh my gosh. Everyone asks me that. So it's pronounced Mulvaney, and it's...
Okay.
Yeah, it's an Irish last name, but I'm not Irish.
Oh, it's Irish.
Yeah, my husband.
All right, so just looking at the name, I thought it was like Persian or...
Is like, is it Eastern European? And it's like, no, it's pronounced Mulvaney. It's Irish, but my maiden name is Restivo, which is Italian.
Okay, I was like, you kind of gave me some like Italian vibes. and you're from Jersey. So
that's where I grew up, yeah.
Did you know? And Staten, I got, my wife has some cousins that live in Staten.
Staten Island? No way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'll be 40 next week.
Damn, you don't even look like a day over like 33.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you probably don't know them then. I was thinking you were gonna say like 30, and I was like, oh, you might know my cousin, my wife's cousins. Nope. But
yeah. So that's why I'm running Philly, to celebrate my 40th birthday.
Oh, that's how you're gonna ring it in
next week.
Yeah. Well, very cool. So Mulvaney.
Yeah, Mulvaney.
That is, yeah, I would have never guessed that right. Said that right. How many times has that gotten butchered just because the way it's spelled?
I mean, every day of my life it gets butchered.
When you first met him, were you like, oh, Mulvaney? And he's like, no, it's not Mulvaney.
Good question. I already knew my husband when I first met him, because we were both college sailors. So I did know his name. We met through college sailing, but then we did not get together until well after college. We connected later on in life.
Tell me about sailing, because I mean, I take it that's the one where you have the person on the in the front yelling at everybody. You know, keeping them on cadence. No, that's crew. That's rowing. Tell me about sailing.
Sailing. So I grew up sailing. My dad's actually a tugboat captain, or he was until he retired. And yeah, I grew up on boats my whole life. I sailed since I was about 10 years old, all kinds of boats, big boats, small boats, single-handed boats, you know, boats with crews. And then I started at a community college in New Jersey when I graduated high school, and they had a sailing team. So I sailed for 2 years with them.
Really, and what kind of boats are you sailing?
So, man, I've sailed a lot of different types of boats. In college, I primarily raced boats that were called Club 420s, which are a two-person boat. So you have a skipper and a crew. And then Lasers, which are a single-handed boat. And then also this boat is called a FJ, which is similar to the 420. It's a double-handed boat, two people.
So anybody listening, look those up, because I have no idea what those look like. When I think of sailing, I'm thinking of like you're everyone's like working together to pull up the sail so you can go with the wind, or if you need to make a hard turn.
I mean, it's the same no matter the size of the boat, but depends on, you know, how big the boat is, how big your crew is. Sailing is such a great sport because you're just out in the elements. Like growing up in the Northeast, it didn't matter what the weather was. It could be raining. It could be snowing. I mean, we just always were out on the boats, and I really enjoyed it.
A lot of camaraderie on a sailing team.
Yes, lots of it.
Yeah, I imagine you all have to like work together as a team, right? Just to all pull towards like first place. How is it like? What's the distance like for a sailing competition?
That's another thing. The small boats, like for college sailing, we were doing courses. So they put out buoys, and it's like the shape of a triangle, usually, if I can explain it right. And then you have the start and finish line in the middle. And then you start from that starting line, and you go to the marks and go around it, and you race people. There's different types of courses you can call out with those buoys and stuff like that. But then if you're on bigger boats, one race I sailed, I actually sailed it with my in-laws. We sailed from Huntington Beach, California to Ensenada, Mexico. And that was
Which is like on the West Coast.
Yeah. Well, my husband's from California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, so where'd you go to college? In New York, like up in the Northeast or out West?
I started at a college in New Jersey, a community college called Ocean County College. And that's where I sailed. But then I moved to Germany after that, and I went to college over there for 4 years.
In Germany?
Uh-huh.
And you are well traveled.
You know, decently traveled. There's a lot of places I still haven't been.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about your time in a truck and just kind of going across the USA at the end. But what was life growing up in Jersey?
Oh, it's a great
Staten
place.
Staten Island.
Well, I was born in Staten Island.
And then raised in Jersey.
And raised in New Jersey. And New Jersey, I feel like it gets such a bad rap, you know? People have so many opinions about it, but where I grew up was so beautiful. I grew up on the shore, so everything to do with the water, the beach. And it's also close to an area called the Pine Barrens, which is really wooded. And you have the best of just all the world. You're super close to New York City, which is where most of my family was born and raised. So I felt like growing up there was a great experience. I got city life. I got ocean life. I got country life. And I am really proud of where I grew up. I loved it.
And I feel like if you're from the Northeast, you got to be tough. Like, you got to have thick skin because, you know, Houston, I mean, down South, it's like very like, hey, welcome. But I feel like when you go up North, it's just a different culture and different type of friendliness.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Because, or is that just a stereotype?
Well, no, it's actually, I think it's true because I didn't realize how tough I could be personality-wise until the first place that my husband and I moved together was Oklahoma. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Well, we lived in Colorado, but then we moved to Oklahoma and I was like, personality-wise, I was struggling a little bit, you know, because I'm so used to, yes, people from the Northeast are a bit more direct. You know what I mean? But
speak your mind.
We do, and a much more outgoing in a different way, you know, but people from the Northeast are very supportive of one another, tight knit, always have each other's back. So I think no matter where you live, there's always community and everyone's friendly. It's just sometimes personalities evolve in different ways. Cause when you're in New York or New Jersey and everything is just so fast paced and you have commuting and a lot going on, like you have to be somewhere quickly. We're not the type of people to take things slow.
Yeah, it's you like, know? Let's go. We ain't taking no time here.
Yeah, and I am used to being very direct. And I did have to learn to watch my language a little bit, I think. People from the Northeast, you know, I don't know if it's just me, but I could have a tendency to mouth off sometimes and had to get that in check.
I mean, most people that I've met from who were raised in the North, they typically are like that. And I take no offense to it. I just think that's how they are. And it's just so funny to see the different like cultures. And I wonder at what point across the United States is that line where it goes from like people who are like very direct to like that Southern, I don't want to say hospitality, because it's not like y'all are, you know, rude or anything. It's just a different way of like going about communicating. But I wonder at what point does it actually transition to like that Southern hospitality?
I'm trying to think, because Northern hospitality is very much a thing. I mean,
oh, really?
I grew up in a very typical Italian American home. So we just always had people over and cooking and food and
no one ever left hungry.
No, everyone left with leftovers for sure.
And is it one of those things where like the mom is always the last one to eat because she's so busy making food for the spread for everybody?
So true. So true. Yeah. But I mean, I've lived in 6 states. So I've had the experience of all types of different subcultures in the US. And I love that.
Yeah. I mean, you're very diverse in just your experiences in terms of where you lived. And you said you lived in Germany for a little bit. How was life over there?
So fun. I mean, I was pretty young. I moved over there when I was, I think, 20. So, you know, 20, single, college, living my best
living life.
And I spoke German pretty decently. My grandfather was actually from Germany. I have a grandfather who was born over there and had studied it through school, decided to go to college over there. The town was beautiful. It was Heidelberg, Germany. And it looked like a storybook. My school was international. So I met people from all over and it really got me out of my shell because I traveled as a kid, you know, but moving alone to Europe was quite the experience. You know, you're by yourself. You have to make new friends. There's a language barrier, which fortunately wasn't too much of a struggle for me. But I started to travel throughout Europe alone and really take advantage of it.
Did you go like backpacking and traveling way or?
Not really backpacking because I did have school. So I had to be there, you know, to go to my classes. But on the weekends, I would hop on a train and, you know, go really anywhere because you can. It's so easy.
Yeah. How was the German food? If there's one thing I know, it's, or one thing I hear, and I've experienced a little bit, but European food is just tastes different than American food.
German food is excellent. It's really good. But my friends would always ask me to make them American food. They'd be like, we want to try mac and cheese. And I'm like, of course, growing up in a home that was predominantly Italian, I was like, I don't really even know how to make mac and cheese. Yeah. I'll try it. Or pancakes or stuff like that.
Yeah. Did you, are you a meat eater?
So I am and I'm not, but that has a bit to do with a health condition that I have. So sometimes I do times where I have to be like completely vegan to help inflammation, but yeah, I'm not, I eat meat on occasion.
I was going with, I'm sure you had your fair share of delicious bratwurst over there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Food's amazing.
Yeah. How many times did you take part in Oktoberfest? All 6 years that you were living over there?
No, I went one time.
Is it like a huge thing over there?
It's huge, yeah. But the cool thing is when you live over there, the towns like will have their own types of festivals. So you don't necessarily have to go to the huge one in Munich. You can celebrate in your city. So there's always street festivals going on. And my favorite is the Christmas markets. They are incredible in Germany. Yeah, super cool.
Is it anything? I take it's like next level compared to the one that's held at NRG every year.
Is that the Nutcracker one?
Nutcracker Market, yeah.
I have never been to that one yet.
I mean, people will make a day of that. That's an event going to that itself. So I just imagine like, you know, it's another level over there, especially if that's like their big thing over there.
Yeah.
You kind of mentioned a health condition.
Oh yeah. So, I don't know how to get started on that. Cause it actually has a lot to do with the last marathon I ran.
Oh,
but I have, I found out I had a genetic mutation called the BRCA mutation. I found that out when I was,
what is it called?
It's BRCA1. And it makes you highly susceptible to certain types of cancer. So usually it's breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and then there's a few other ones. But yeah, I had been struggling. I'm sorry?
I have heard of that one.
Yeah, I was struggling for a long time with a lot of really crazy symptoms and conditions. Found out I had the mutation and they had recommended that I remove both ovaries. So getting that done at 38 is quite the experience. That it was hard, and
absolutely
it's something now that I'm really outspoken about because there's not a lot of information about it. And when I found out I had to have that done, I started connecting with other women of all ages who had to have it done, and to have it done before 40 is really hard on your body. And if we get into the last Chevron marathon, that was a marathon that I didn't know if it was going to happen because I was really not myself, and the surgery took a huge toll on my body. So now I live every day managing a permanent endocrine condition.
Were you and your husband already at that point where you're like, you know, I think we're good with our one child? Or, cause you know, obviously when they take both of them out, that completely shuts the door.
I'm really glad you asked that question. Because that's another thing that I do try to bring awareness to is, I love being a mother, and I have a 7-year-old boy, and I definitely wanted more children in my life. Unfortunately, with the health conditions I was going through, that was not the journey for me. And it was a really hard thing to come to terms with. And that's another thing. It's just so kind of shadowed. I think women's health issues aren't spoken enough about. We keep them kind of secret. We don't talk about what goes on, and the whole experience was devastating for me, but marathon running kept me focused And it actually kept me healthy because there was a point where, one, the sadness that comes with when you're a woman and you have to say, okay, I'm one and done. That's it. You know, the family I thought I was going to have is not going to materialize. But I mean, I have a beautiful child and I have a beautiful family and I'm so fortunate, you know,
for sure.
Kind of pulled me out of that. And then when I had the surgery, my body did not take well to it. And there was a point where I couldn't even get out of bed. I was having all kinds of crazy symptoms, things like my hair falling out, forgetting things, feeling sick every day. And I went to my surgeon. I remember crying in her office and being like, am I ever going to be myself ever again? And she was like, you have to just stay strong, stay active. She's like, if you stay with your running, if you stay with this journey towards health and wellness, she's like, you will be okay. It's just going to be a hard road. So I stuck with it. And I'm so glad I did, because it pulled me out of one of the darkest times of my life, you know?
I'm sure part of it was a little bit of, I don't want to say traumatic, but post-traumatic, like depression, just because, you know, it's one thing to be content with how many kids you have, but it's also another thing to be told, like, this is going to, like, to let that be placed in front of you with no control over it. Like, this is going to be the end of us having kids. You know, I can't even imagine the emotional and mental toll that takes on a female. You know, it took us 2 years, me and my wife, to have our first child. And there was a time where I didn't think we were going to have kids. Mm-hmm. Luckily, you know, I'm blessed with like four, but, you know, just to have that possibility of like, man, this may not happen. And then to have a surgery like that, where you know it's not going to happen. I mean, I can't even imagine what you went through physically, but just mentally and emotionally.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of women go through different variations of struggles with this. And they often do it privately when people ask me that question, and I'm really sensitive to that because I know what I went through, but I welcome when people ask me questions because, yeah, it was sad. And of course I feel emotions, but it gives me that opportunity to say, this was my experience, and I can either educate someone or help someone else who may be going through something similar and say, because one of the things I found that was so helpful when I found out I had to have the surgery was I started connecting with communities on social media, other women who have gone through this or have that genetic mutation, and telling each other stories of there were symptoms that I started to have that I didn't even know I was going to have, because women, it's just, they say, oh, don't talk about your journey with having children, or don't talk about certain things like a miscarriage or something. But I've started to be like, no, I'm going to talk about it because I know how alone I felt. And I definitely don't want any other person, whether it's a man, woman, whoever, to feel alone in that struggle or journey.
For sure. You know, it's almost like a double-edged sword for people who are outside of that situation, right? Because mm-hmm. you're going through something, but then we're also, you know, you never want to ask somebody like, how come you don't have kids? Or, you know, it's a weird thing. And you don't know if that person just doesn't want to talk about it, or if they're like yearning to talk about it and just like let people know. So I can definitely see why it's almost like lonely at some point to just like not want to be able to speak it, because, you know, the people on the outside were also like, don't want to ask. I have cousins and friends who don't have kids. And, you know, I don't want to be the ones like, you ever think about having kids? Or, you know, there's a reason why you know, it's a fine line to cross. And I mean, it's good to hear your side, because it's like, I want to talk about it. I want to share that, because you just don't know who else is going through that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult thing to bring up from your aspect, but then also, I guess, from people from the outside who don't really know how to broach the topic. But I, you know, thank you for sharing that. I had no idea about that. Like, you know, obviously I thought this podcast or this interview is going to go one way, and now we just went off on a tangent. Now, that's the best part about these things, is because I get to find out about you and your backstory, and, you know, all, you know, how that all came about.
Thank you.
So, you know, you lived in Germany. At what point did you start kind of dabbling into some of the running?
So I got into running, like I said, 10 years ago. I was 30. We had moved to Ohio. So we moved from Oklahoma to Ohio. And I didn't really, you know, know anybody in Ohio.
What part?
Canton, Ohio. So where the Football Hall of Fame is. Man, that's such a great town. I loved living there. It was beautiful. And at the time, my mom was battling ovarian cancer. So, of course, you know, it was hard. I mean, you feel powerless when you see your parent struggling or anyone struggling. And it was a hard road for her. And I had started running in Ohio to get out, kind of like have something to myself, meet some people, see the area. But then my neighbor, her daughter ran for a group called Fred's Team, which fundraises money for Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York. And they're like a, you know, cancer hospital research place, all that stuff. And I was so inspired by what she did that I signed up for the New Jersey Half Marathon and I fundraised for ovarian cancer research. So that was really how I got started into running, and I haven't stopped.
Before we move on, how's your mom doing?
So she passed away a little over 6 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
Oh, that's okay. But you know what? She lives such a beautiful life, even with ovarian cancer. I think she had it for a couple of years. She made it, and she lived every moment to the fullest when she had it. One of the best memories I have was actually the New Jersey Half Marathon I ran to fundraise for ovarian cancer. I remember finishing the race, and you finish that race on a boardwalk. So the ocean is like on your right, and it's so beautiful. And then I was approaching the finish line, and I saw my mom like peek her head over the gates. And I just remember that so vividly. She was so excited for me. She was just so proud of me. And it's one of the best memories I have of her. And I mean, she would travel, she would show up to things. She was the best grandmother to my son.
So that first race definitely has a lot of meaning and sentimental like backstory to it.
It does. And the amount of support I got for that race was huge. I fundraised, I think, over $3,000 for that race. And it was in my home state of New Jersey. So, I mean,
I love the fact that your mom was able to see you do this race in her honor, but then she also got to spend time with your son.
She did. I ended up running that race and then got pregnant and had Hank the next year.
Oh, wow. So she got maybe a year or two with
Hank? Yeah, she passed away when my son was 8 months old. So she had a good amount of time with him, and she was such a great grandmother. And actually, she is, I'm sorry if I get a little emotional, but
no.
She really is the reason why I'm the woman that I am today.
You know, I always say crying is a form of unexpressed love that you have for a person. So when you get emotional talking about somebody, it's because you have obviously a deep found love for this person, but it's also that unexpressed love that you know, that just brings you back.
And I'm a crier. So
all right.
Yeah, be prepared through this podcast,
man. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not a crier, but I definitely like feel the emotion of what you're saying coming through. And it's just a beautiful thing. So, you know, going from that first half marathon to, you know, through the years, kind of take me through that little process. You obviously started running in your mom's honor, and then it kind of just became a thing for you.
It did. So I ran the New Jersey Half Marathon in 2015. My son was born in 2016, and then we found out we were going to be relocated to Houston. It was right after my mom had passed away, and it was such a weird coincidence because she had come down to Houston to seek treatment at MD Anderson, but at that point it was too late. And when she passed away, I was in Jersey for a bit, came home to Ohio, and my husband was like, "Oh, we're moving to Houston." And I was like, "What? Like, life is chaotic. I can't do this." But, you know, I had to suck it up. I had to do it. So we come down to Houston, and I mean, of course I had stayed running, but I never tackled any big race after the New Jersey half. But I kept thinking, I remember when I finished the New Jersey half, and I told my mom, I was like, "I wonder if I could do that again, like run a full marathon." And she was like, "You can do anything you put your mind to." So that year, Oh my gosh. So I hope I can mention this on the podcast. Bleep it out if I can't. But I went home to Jersey with my son. My husband was out partying with some friends, and they had a little too much fun and were drinking and signed us all up for the Houston Full Marathon.
So I was that's, like, that's one of the best ways to get into it.
Oh my gosh. I was like, what? So he calls me. He's like, we're doing the full marathon. And I was like, you have to be kidding me. I was like, Hank was only a year old. I was like, can I physically do this? And I am so glad he did do that, because that marathon, first of all, I had to do all these long runs in a city that I am brand new to. So I got to know the city. I got to know so many friends, and it pushed me through the grief of losing a parent, the difficulty of being a new mother, you know, on my own pretty much. And then, because my husband, he traveled a lot and making this new life. And it was just like so raw. It was a crazy experience, but I'll never forget that.
And then being in a new city almost by yourself because he's traveling so much.
Yeah. And I crossed the finish line of that marathon. And I remember being like, okay, I can handle anything life throws at me.
Timeline wise, what year is this?
It was the 2018 Chevron Full.
So you went half marathon and then straight into next big race was a full.
It was hard. And when I finished that, I was like, I don't think I can do that ever again. And it did take me a couple years to tackle the full again. I didn't do another full until 2022.
Was 2018 the hot one? Was that the one where
was the freezing cold one.
It was the freezing cold one. I think 2019 was a hot one. And then 2020 was super cold, I think, again.
Yeah. And then last year's was hot.
Oh, don't even get me started on last year's. It reminded me of Houston half like 2 weeks ago.
Oh man, that half was, ooh, that was something.
Hey, but you still sub too. So I'm super proud of you. So you do that full marathon in 2018. Do you remember what your time was?
Yes, it was 5 hours and 45 minutes.
And at that point, are you still just, you know, running for fun? I mean, I don't know if you're much like how competitive you get. We'll kind of get into that. But are you still just kind of like doing it more for just the finish line aspect? Or are you doing it more to kind of see like, oh, let's see what I can do?
That was definitely one of, I'm the type of person who, like, when my husband said he had signed us up, like, I'm doing it. It's really hard. In. Yeah, I'm all in. It's hard for me to back out of something. And I just was going through a lot at the time. So I was like, I didn't care about my time. I just was like, I'm doing this to finish and see if I can do it. I didn't really start caring about times until recently. To be honest with you, only because I can be a little competitive sometimes. But the running journey was never about PRs. It was never about any of that. It was more about testing my limits. Absolutely. And just getting out there for fun, you know?
Do you remember what that first Houston Marathon was like for you?
Vividly. Because it was so hard. I mean,
well, training-wise, how far did you get peak? How far did you get in your training, like max mileage?
Oh, that when I hit the 18 mile long run, and then I had hurt myself. So I chilled out. I was like, okay, I'm going to let this injury resolve and then continue some running and show up on race day. And I'm really glad I did that, because I think sometimes we can have a tendency to push ourselves to meet certain training goals. But if you have an injury, it's like first priority, let that heal. You know, you'll still be okay. If you miss one training run, it's not that serious. You know, if you miss one long run, not that serious. As long as you get like the bulk of it done, you're going to get that race. You're going to finish it, you know?
Yeah.
But crazy.
Going through that course, did you hit the wall?
Oh, definitely. I hit a wall. At mile 20, I started crying, and my husband stayed with me the whole time. And I just started crying to him super random stuff. I was like, I miss Hank. Like, I don't know where I'm going. He's like, the course is marked. What are you talking about? And I was like, I can't do this. It was so I was so dramatic at that race. But yeah, I finished it.
Did you cross that finish line? Like arms in the air. It was like,
I was just kind of like, what just happened? You know, I couldn't believe I did it. And I was super emotional and crying. And then I remember leaving the convention center and going to get lunch with my friends. And my sister had sent these t-shirts for like my son to wear. And it said like, "Congrats, Mom, let's get tacos" or something. It was really funny. But I remember I was so sore and I was just like crawling all over the place. But it was awesome.
It was one of those things like, we're not doing that ever again.
Oh, I did. I said that. I said, there's no way I'm doing another full. And I didn't. I did the half marathon or the Aramco half a few years. But then, of course, I got like that itch again. And I was like, I need to do that again. And now the full is my favorite distance. It's not my best distance, but it's my favorite.
I will say, of all the distances, I love the full, even though it hurts when I'm out there. But even just the training part. Mm-hmm. Of going to a full, I love the training aspect of it. So you run Chevron Aramco pretty much every single year since that first marathon.
Yep, every year I've lived here.
Yeah, and if y'all guys haven't seen Christine on, of course you definitely will, because she's always sporting a vintage like New York Giants hat. I take it that's your team, or is that just because of the NY on there?
That's my team. So that blue one that I wore for years, my mom had actually given that to me. So that's okay. I wore that hat at every race, but it got so old, I had to retire it. So I got a red one because I'm always getting lost. Everyone's like, it's a training run or whatever. They're like, okay, you made the wrong turn, Christine. So I got the red one so people can find me.
I did notice that. I was like, oh, she switched it up. But yeah, I always knew, I mean, I think we connected on Instagram maybe a year or two ago, but I always knew you as the New York Giants blue vintage cap. And then I think I saw you with the red one. I was like, oh, new hat.
Yeah, had to retire.
It's cool to hear the sentimental value of that blue cap. I'm sure it's somewhere in that house, just on its own pedestal.
I always have it.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, you do a couple fulls, you did the full, you do a couple halves, and then you said you kind of start getting that itch to try the full again.
I did it again, and I had a much better race, of course, because at this point I kind of knew what I was doing. I started connecting with a lot more running groups in Houston, and I had more support, and also I felt better. I mean, my first full, my son was only a year old, so I was only a year out from having a baby, and he had been a C-section, so my, you know, they say, oh yeah, you jump back into things at 6 weeks, it's such a lie. It takes your body a long time to go back to normal.
I think you're just fully healed at 6 months. And then you got to worry about, like, you know, the muscles are obviously weak because you haven't been able to use mm-hmm. them. You don't want to like re-tear any incisions.
I mean, you don't want to mess anything up.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm all talking about from experience, but
that marathon was much better. And I did it in 5:07. And then I did the 2023 Chevron full. I guess it was 8 months after having my surgery, my oophorectomy. I didn't know if that one would happen, but I felt so good that day. I had so much support on the race course. My friends came out. You know, my husband, he always runs the full, but he shows up at the finish line without doubt every time. And I finished that one in 4 hours, 45 minutes. Shocked myself with that one, to be honest.
Yeah, that was like a 15-minute-ish improvement from the year before.
Yeah,
the weather still sucked that day too.
I know, it was hot. And I'd hit some road bumps in the training that year. And I remember being like, okay, I lined up next to that pacer, the 450. And I just felt so defeated for some reason because my training hadn't gone right. And I was like, not today, Christine. Like, it's not going to be today. But it was. I hit 445. So it taught me to like never underestimate myself. You know, I think for a long time I was underestimating myself. And I would get in my head a little bit and I'd be like, I can't keep this pace, or I'm not going to hit that goal. But I had to learn to stop with that negative talk and realize this is where I belong. Like, I am in the right place and I'm working really hard for this. And I now have such a different mindset, because I think things like any type of sport's intimidating, right? And you're always going to feel maybe, I'm nervous, or I don't know if I can do this.
Not prepared. Or at least
that's how I felt, you know? And now I'm like, no, let's do this. Like, I'm not messing around.
I think it was at 2022 marathon where I was like waiting for some friends to come in. And then I see the blue hat. And I was like, I know her from Instagram. Go. I was like, wait, it's Christine, I think.
No, that was the last one because you were standing next to my friend, Catherine.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was it. No, I think this last one, I think I saw you cross the finish line because you like came across and I think you saw your friends and you were like, oh.
Oh, man, I was so amped. And I tend to get like that too. I just get so excited. And I just, there was a point in that marathon too where I saw all of my mom friends, like Hank's friends, the moms showed up at a cheering section at mile 18. I got so excited. I ran up the retaining wall to go see them. My watch registered like an emergency and shut everything down. Oh, I was like, oh man, I had to restart the watch, but I love it so much. I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So before that, we had to talk about a Houston half where I think it took place on Halloween and you found a cat. I remember seeing, I guess you had posted about it and I was like, wait, she stopped and found a cat and now she like is living with the, like the cat's living with you guys.
So the cat is, I think, what brought us together because you had Glenda on the podcast and she mentioned the cat and then somebody found it and was like, hey, she talked about the cat you found. Oh my gosh. That's right.
Yeah.
That was wild. So yeah, I was running the Houston half. What year was that? 2021. Yeah.
That had to be the 2021.
I'm like running along and I hit mile 12 and all of a sudden I see this tiny little black kitten just dart across the course. And I just shouted, I said, oh my gosh. I was like, there's a cat. And people were like, what is she talking about? And the woman in front of me actually bent down. She grabbed the cat. She turned around and she dropped the cat into my arms and then just took off. So I was standing there at mile 12 with this little kitten and she was so tiny. She was so little. And I went, there was a police officer. So I walked up to him and I was like, can you take the cat? And he said he couldn't. So I'm just kind of standing there and I call my husband and I'm like, hey, he had been biking the course that day. And I was like, I have a cat. And he was just like, what? He was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I found a kitten. I'm at mile 12. Can you come meet me? Because she kind of didn't want me to hold her. She was a little bit wild. And I said, come meet me, please. He says, fine. Okay. So he rides the bike down. Hank's in the bike trailer. I give him the cat and I finish the race. I come back and find them. And yeah, we, her name is Spooky because it was Halloween. Hank named her. But I'm really glad I found her because she had a broken tail. So a few days later, she was hiding under the furniture and I didn't understand what was going on. She had a horrible infection from her tail being broken. And the vet was like, yeah, if you hadn't rescued her, she would have died. And we had to amputate the tail. So she has no tail.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she has a little stub and she's just the best cat. She's so cute. But I never thought I'd ever have a cat. And then yeah, I found one running a half marathon.
I was like, I remember talking to Glenda about it. I was like, did you hear that story about the runner who found the cat? She's like, yes, I think I reached out to her the other day. And I was like, oh, connect me with her.
Well, that was the best because Glenda's so awesome. And now her and I are friends. And yeah, the cat just brought everyone together.
Yeah, Glenda's a personality, man. She cracks me up. Fun. Now, were you on a time goal during that race and then you saw the cat, or were you just kind of like just running it to run it?
So I was, because I was doing really well and I thought, I was like, ooh, I'm going to finally break 2 hours today. Did not happen. I think I finished that in like 2:27 because of the whole cat situation.
Spooky.
But it was worth it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it didn't take you very long to break sub two because now I think you can do that on a hot day. Obviously you can. What race after that were you like, all right, finally I get to kind of test and see where I'm at in my training?
Oh, that's a good question. I really hadn't thought about it until this year because I noticed my time started getting faster, right? But I had to change my lifestyle, like really overhaul it. After getting the oophorectomy and dealing with that, I started to eat a lot cleaner, eat healthier, work out. I was much more dedicated to my workouts. I cut out drinking significantly. Like I'm not completely a non-drinker, but I'll have like maybe the occasional glass of wine here or there. But once I started to do that, I started to see a huge change in my performance. And then I was like, okay, let's see how much I can push this. But it was also really mental too, because I was always in my head. I was like, oh, you know, I see all these runners running super fast times or sub 2 half-hour marathons. And I always just was like, I'm not that girl. I'm a casual runner, you know, it's fine. But then once I started to surprise myself, I was like, let's do this. You know,
so I think that's the breakthrough that a lot of people feel, right? They're like, yeah, look, I'm just a recreation runner. I'm just doing this for fun. And then you kind of see like, holy crap, my body did something I was not expecting it to do. I wonder how far I can push this. And then it's not so much competitiveness with other runners and seeing what they're doing, but just competitiveness within yourself.
Oh, 100%. Like once I had the mindset of, okay, the only person that I have to compete against is the person I was yesterday or the person I was a year ago. And that's where I started to see growth. But then, you know, that's a tricky slope to go down because you don't want to overdo it. And I've learned also where to cut myself slack and have an easy race and have a fun race or things like that and pull back a little.
There's a process. There's for sure a process. You can't just go from like making some breakthroughs and then, you know, throwing down some ridiculous times. It's like a problem. You can only gain so much fitness within a year. It's like, let's get here, still have fun. Then let's get here and still have fun. Right. So Spooky was in 2021. When was that procedure that you had?
2022.
Mm-hmm. So that was before or after the marathon?
It was before the 2023.
Okay. So you ran the 2022 marathon and then you had the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, then you got to run it back for, and you did really well too.
Yeah, that really was the race that changed just my mindset, my outlook. It was a, you know, it was risky. I remember when I signed up for that marathon and I did it because I was like, okay, I know what I have to go through. I know what I'm facing, but I did still want to have something that gave me hope that it was going to be okay, because I had read this book about women who went through that surgery and had to go through a life of surgical menopause, it's called, which is a misnomer for sure, because it's not like the natural process at all. And there was a chapter where there was a woman who, she was a marathon runner and she had to give it up. I just remember closing that book and being like, I'm going to do everything I can. So that's not my story. But I knew there was a risk to that. But I was like, I'm just going to put it out. You know, sometimes you have to put things out there into the universe. Maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't, but it's always worth a shot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you get from 2022, you have the procedure. At what point could you start running again?
So because the actual surgery is not that bad, it's how do you say, laparoscopic. Mm-hmm. I was on my feet relatively quickly. But then
just letting your body adjust.
Yeah, the side effects started to kick in hard and right away. They were pretty wild. They say, oh, you know, hot flashes, temperature regulation, things like that. But you go through, I remember the nausea. It reminded me of morning sickness when I was pregnant. Like I'd get up every morning and I just felt so sick. I was going through a lot of pain, joint pain, nerve pain. And there was a time where I was on a trip with my family and my son, we were at a little water park and I just was in so much pain. I was sitting at the tables and my son was like, oh, mommy, why can't you play with me? And that was so hard to hear. Yeah, because I'd been such an active person my whole life. And it was so hard, but I knew it was kind of one of those moments where I was like, I just can't quit. And I picked up my training, my actual training. So the surgery had been done in May, early May. And I picked up my actual marathon training in August that year, but it was tough. It was tough. And it was not perfect. And it taught me how to give myself a lot of grace and say, the training does not have to be perfect. I'm just trying to get to the starting line.
For sure. And I mean, you pick up, I mean, August is like a fantastic starting point. I guess the only bad part is it's in the middle of summer, right? And you're,
it was so hot and I couldn't
trying to breathe through this humidity.
Oh, Houston heat, man, is something else. It changes you.
It does. Yeah. And it doesn't get better. Every year, like I think this year we had what, 42 straight days of 100 degree.
Oh, this year was crazy. Like,
temps. It was nuts. But you know, kind of along that route, so you make it to the start line. How was that 2023 marathon? Was just a bit full of like highs throughout that race? Like, yes, feel good. Yes, I get to see this. Oh, I'm so happy. I'm just out here running. It was just a mixed bag of emotions.
It was. I mean, now, you know, I remember being like, oh, I don't want to go for this run, or having days where I complain, and having gone through something where I'm like, this could have been taken away from me. I will show up no matter what. I don't complain when I head out there. And I was on that starting line thinking to myself, okay, don't worry about the goal, just one foot in front of the other. But I was feeling good. And the thing with living through surgical menopauses, you have really, really good days. And when you have them, you want to embrace them for everything you got. And because there are some days that I have really, really bad days, and my runs are not going to look like what they look like on the good day. So I felt it. I was on that starting line. I started moving. And around mile 15 was when I felt like, okay, I don't need to hold back. Like, having a great day, I'm going for it. And the energy was so great. And
you definitely made up for the weather.
Oh yeah. I really didn't think about the heat too much that year. I was actually grateful we weren't all freezing at the starting line.
Oh, you're the opposite of me. I was like, can a brother get a breeze around here somewhere?
And also I took some things a little more seriously, like with fuel. I had my fueling strategy down. It's still a little weird because I don't do gels, actually. I have a tough time with them. So I'm eating like Clif Bars and jelly beans, but I had a whole plan and hydrated, all that stuff. You know, I went in prepared.
Is that even now you don't do like gels? You still kind of just stick with the bars?
Yeah, I do. I have a strategy of pretzels and gummy bears in one bag, jelly beans in another. And then if it's a full marathon, I do a Clif Bar like around mile 15.
Man, that sounds like my type of nutrition. those aren't even like fueling. That's just like, oh, you know what? It's time for a snack.
But I definitely, if I see a donut or something on the side, I eat that stuff. I'm like,
are you really? I'm like, no, I really want to, but I can't.
I'm an eater for sure when I run. Yeah. And it helps. And something I do, like, this is going to sound really absurd, but fueling strategies, I think they're so personal because it depends on what works with your body, you know? And in the summer, if I'm on a long run, I will stop halfway and I will eat an ice cream sandwich. I swear by it.
No, like, you just stop by a convenience store?
And like, yeah, 10 miles in or so, I'll get an ice cream sandwich and it gives me enough energy to see another 10 miles through in the heat. I don't know why.
Man, ice cream usually makes me more like thirsty.
Oh, well, I definitely carry water, but yeah.
So, do you have like your set convenience store that you're like, bam, 10 miles, I'm stopping in?
Yeah, there's one. I have two. There's one. Oh gosh, it's like near White Oak and Usener Street, if that's how you say it. And then there's another one on Memorial, that when I run Buffalo Bayou to Memorial Park and back, I stop at those.
Do you run with folks when you're stopping by the convenience store?
I'm usually by myself. I try to, if I'm long running with a group, I'll go with the freaks, which then I have to bring whatever, because I don't know where I'm the worst at like looking up the routes ahead of time.
Oh, same.
No one follow me, ever. But yeah, again, like with fueling, I was careful. I went into that and I shocked myself. And then that's how I ended up moving towards a sub 2 hour half marathon, in March of that year. Yeah.
And that was the Run Houston series.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, man. So you crushed that marathon because you improved by, well, one sub 5. And then that was like I think we said 18 minute. Ish improvement?
Yeah, about.
And then you go sub two in your half, which, you know, I think there's, I think with every distance, there's always like a certain bar per se, right? Like half marathon, it's the sub two. Mm-hmm. Marathons is like the sub four. So you got one goal, you got that sub two out the way. I'm sure you're just on a high because you're like, man, I've been chasing. I didn't know my body can do a sub two. And here I am crushing it by 6 minutes.
Yeah. That race, I remember running it and approaching the finish line. Like, I don't know if I could have maintained that pace any longer because I had pushed it pretty hard. And I was glad I did that because then I knew what it felt like to not be scared to push it. Cause I had been scared for so long. I was like, can I do that? I'd look at my watch and be like, there's no way I can maintain that. I definitely have an issue with getting into my head sometimes. So breaking those barriers, I've started to remove that type of self-talk where I'm second guessing myself.
And I feel like you're just now like breaking the surface, scratching the surface of what you could potentially do now in terms of like these distances, you know, going sub 150, going sub 430. Do you have some end goals that you kind of like, you have in mind, like, you know what, I think I want to eventually work up to this.
So the last Houston half, I tried. I wanted that sub 150, but it was just too hot. The heat, I couldn't do it. And that...
Brutal.
Yeah, I had to just let that go.
But to pull off a 157 on a brutally hot... I mean, it was insulting. I would say the humidity was just insulting to me. Pull off a 157, which is like, what, 3 minutes off that mark from your 140, 154? On that type of like condition, I mean, you get like 40 degree weather or sub 50 degree weather. Oh, that's going to happen for sure.
Yeah. I feel like attempting the sub 4 marathon for me could be aggressive this year just because my last one was 4:45. But I'm going to see how Philly goes. And if it goes well, then see how, you know, Chevron goes. I know that's taking off a lot of time. And again, it's like getting into my head of how much can I do?
Yeah, well, when is Philly just right around the corner?
Philly is on the 19th. Yeah. So it's what, like not even a week away?
Or yeah, 11 days away maybe.
Yeah.
From the time we're recording this. Have you already hit your peak week?
Yes, I have. So my training kind of, you know, and that's one thing with when you sent the list of balancing life and training, I wanted to be like, well, I don't always balance that super great.
It's hard.
Oh, it's so hard, especially being a parent and working full time and volunteering and everything that I need to do. I had to get a little creative with preparing for Philly.
I tell a lot of people, you know, people ask me how marathon training is. And I was like, you know, if you're just running for a finish line, you can, I mean, there's a lot more leeway, but if you have like a certain time goal or a certain like thing you want to do in a race, it's almost like a part-time job on top of your regular life.
Well, something that really I embrace now, trying to juggle family, training, work, is I don't really stick to a training plan at this point. I'll like have the Hal Higdon printouts and I'll stay on progressions and stuff like that. But I know that I want to be a marathon runner. I want to be able to do races. It's something I really enjoy. So I just continuously kind of train all year and I stay prepared to sign up for a race when I can. I do take breaks. Like I'll pull back a little bit because, you know, my body needs a break, things like that. But it's just, I approach it more like a lifestyle than a, you know, training season attitude.
For sure. Yeah. I think lifestyle is a good way to put it because you're not always motivated, but if it's part of your lifestyle, discipline mm-hmm. will get you out that door. Have you ever thought about picking up a coach?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. So all you Houston coaches out there,
I know.
Y'all want to reach out to Christine. She's got some goals that
I've never worked with a coach. I would definitely consider it. But then I'm like, oh, that sounds so, it sounds so serious. And again, I'm in that like headspace of, oh, what am I doing?
Everyone's a candidate to be coached, but you are for sure a candidate to be coached. And just kind of, again, get to that next level, get to that next level of pushing your body to, you know, another goal, another PR. Yeah. So
I should work with a coach. They would help me get a little more serious about it.
Yeah, a little bit of structure, right? Like, I like to think that I stay in shape year round, but sometimes you need that coach just kind of guide you towards, you know, that make sure you stay on track with whatever like race you have going. You excited for Philly?
I'm so excited. Yeah.
How's that course? Is it tough?
So I was talking to a friend yesterday and he said it's hilly, but I mean, really anything outside of Houston is probably going to feel hilly.
I mean, that's true, except for Allen Parkway.
I'm excited. I've never run a marathon outside of Houston. It'll be my first one outside of Houston. And it'll be my fourth, number four for 40. And my family will be there. So I'm super excited.
I did my first out-of-state marathon in October, and it's so different. I really kind of enjoy it. Obviously Houston Chevron has a special place, but kind of liking these like traveling marathons, yeah. These little runcations. Mine was in Whistle Stop. It's like Ashland, Wisconsin, in the middle of like nowhere. It's like really small town. But it ended up being a trail race, but it's not like, people are like, man, that looked like a trail race. And I was like, it's not a trail race like Rocky Raccoon. It's a trail race as if you're running in Memorial Park around, like it was that type of like surface. The only problem was it was raining and there was a major headwind. So the ground became a little slippery, so you couldn't really get a good grip. So you're trying to like push these paces and it just wasn't like working out that way. But I was looking at like grandma's, there was like a tunnel marathon in Seattle that I like. CIM is something I want to try, but I think I'm going to start trying to dabble in some of these like out-of-state marathons. I'm still going to run Chevron, but my running joke is that I've run Chevron 2 times and I don't even remember the course because I'm just so like tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Like the first year we went through the tunnels, people were like, man, those tunnels were so amazing. I'm like, I don't remember it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I like that part. That was cool. I think because it's like so being born in New York, I wanted to do New York this year for my 40, but you lottery and it's so hard to get into. So of course, I'm like, Philly, okay, let's do it. But I'm so curious about other marathons that aren't majors, you know, and I've started to make a list of ones I want to try out of state that seem really, really cool and have really nice courses. I'd like to do, and I gotta see if they still have it. The Football Hall of Fame has a marathon.
No way, really?
Yeah, and that's where my son was born, and I would really like to go back and do that one.
Like the old stomping ground.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, I think I definitely highly recommend doing some like traveling races. It's just different. One, you don't know what to expect. You don't know, like Chevron, I know where everything is at this point.
Yeah,
I know where I am on the course. It's just kind of nice to be able to do something different. Man, that's gonna be a quick turnaround from Philly to Chevron.
Yes. But I do have my sights on that Rocky Raccoon. So I'm trying to keep my mileage up. I haven't signed, but I'm like, oh, I really want to do it.
Are we thinking Rocky 50 or Rocky like 100 or like 50K, 50 or 100K or 100?
Ooh.
Or the half marathon. There's a half marathon just installed there too.
Probably I want to go for the 50K. See how that goes.
You should do it. I did that one back in February and I was like, you know what? I just ran the marathon. I'm already at 26 miles. How hard can 5 more miles be? The best thing about like Rocky Raccoon is not so much about the time, but like there's a lot of walking involved. Like it's not just straight road running. Like you have to walk at some point because you're going to trip on tree roots. I love the aid stations. Like there was like fried Oreos. There was like bacon. There was breakfast tacos. I was like, yes, give me all that. Give me all that.
That sounds like my kind of race.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You would love it. I think then you get that ultra title out of the way as well, too.
Yeah. I want to do it. So.
So everybody that's running Rocky, you got to like pressure into this.
Oh man.
You put it in the universe. So now it's out there.
don't tempt me with a good time, people. Like, I will sign up and that'll be it.
So the great thing about Chevron this year is you're kind of doing double duty, not only as a runner, but as an ambassador. What made you decide to put your name in the hat and represent Chevron?
Ooh, so it's not the first time. I think I applied last year too. And then this year I got it. I was so surprised and so excited, because the thing about Chevron is I just feel like I owe so much to that race. I've done it since I moved here. I have grown so much through that event. It's really changed my life. And I wanted to find a way to be like, okay, I'd like to give back to an organization that means so much to me. And if that means promoting the event, talking about the event, helping other people feel like it's something they can do, it's so important to me to give back to that organization.
I bet Cora's like, man, why didn't I not pick her up last year? Because you and Rosa, man, y'all are like y'all are like the go-tos. Like, she needs something done, boom, y'all on it. Whether it's TikToks, Reels, Thursday morning runs.
I'm enjoying it so much. And again, it was a lot of just service to the community, because I don't, you know, when you're going through really difficult things in life, like I had mentioned before, you know, moving down here and having, right after I lost my mom to cancer, new baby, I didn't know anybody. I'm looking for things to do. I'm looking for community. And the Chevron Houston Marathon is what really pulled me through. Really, I kind of ended up building my life down here through the running community. You know, that's where I've met my friends. Some of my closest friends I met through the running community. It's how I like to get out. It's how I like to see the city. So any way I can serve that marathon, I'm so fortunate to do it.
They're making y'all work though. Y'all working this year for ambassadors, man. You know, the years past when people I know have been ambassadors before, like, you know, it wasn't nearly as involved. Part of it was because they were coming back from COVID. But man, I see y'all doing stuff with the Dynamo. See y'all, you know, inaugurating the new track out there. Y'all have to do the kickoff series when y'all were at all the different like locations back in for Global Running Day.
Oh, I love that. That was so great because we got to run with different groups. And
where were you at?
I went to the one up in the Woodlands. And then where was the? And then Vintage Park.
You're at the Vintage Park one?
I was at the Vintage Park one, and I had never run at either of those locations.
That's right, you were, yeah, that's right. Because I had reached out, I was like, hey, that's my neck of the woods.
And that was really, really cool, and I love that because I actually, there was a girl who I connected with on Instagram, who she had run at the Hughes Landing one, and I saw her there, and, you know, it was awesome. And I think Cora is doing such an amazing job, too.
Absolutely. With everything.
And to be honest with you, it's like, it's really fun. And if someone tells me, oh, there's going to be music, a DJ, dancing, I want something like that, I'm sign me up. Like,
I saw the TikTok with the
my God.
The one y'all just did.
Any excuse to like dance or just get out of my shell a little bit, I'll take it.
I mean, that was probably the first time I actually saw some like, because I mean, honestly, you and I only met in person at the Houston Half. So I knew you from like Instagram and your post, but I never really like knew you, but that kind of showed your fun personality with that little dance number right there.
I like to let that out sometimes, you know.
Yeah. You kind of mentioned the Freaks, which is fantastic group, with shout out to Patrick for that. What other groups have you linked up with and ran a couple miles?
So Holler Haulers is one of my like religious run groups. Been going running with them for years. Running with Freaks, love that group. And then if I've got time, I'll run at any of the Fleet Feet runs. I like them. I'll usually go to the River Oaks one because that's close. Latinas Run Houston is another group.
Is that the one on Mondays?
Yeah, on Mondays.
With Viv. My man Viv.
And then, yeah, those, so Holler Haulers, Freaks, Latinos Run Houston when I can make it, Memorial Trails when I can make it. I try to get out.
Now, Freaks are on Friday, right?
Uh-huh.
When are, and then you have the Fleet Feed on Monday. When are Haulers?
Oh, Haulers. Wednesday night.
Now, where do they meet up out of?
Holler Brewery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So catch Christine at one of these events. If you need a running community, she'll definitely like be one of the first people to reach out to you.
Come to that one, because I mean, my son was practically raised through that run club. Like, he'd be a baby in the stroller and we would take him on the runs. And then now he runs with them sometimes.
That's right. I did see that.
He also
ran at the track too, right? I think I saw you post something like.
You did.
He was excited once you kind of told him it was like a race.
That's when he perked up. Yeah. It was an early morning for him. But then I was like, hey, check this out. They're going to run. He was like, yes, let's do it.
That's awesome. Just kind of like wind it down. So we got Chevron coming up here. First we got Philly. Good luck at that. Then we have Chevron. I'm excited to see how you do with these back-to-back races. But outside of running, you do quite a bit of yoga.
I do. I love yoga. Yeah.
Tell me about your yoga career.
So I started yoga when I was 17, actually. I was in a car accident. And I couldn't really do much for a little bit. So I was seeing a chiropractor after that, and he had recommended yoga and got into that. And I've been practicing ever since.
And was this in Houston?
No, that was in New Jersey when I was growing
up. Okay, mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So got into yoga.
And you said you're like 200 hour, like certified. I don't want to butcher the correct terminology because all the yogis are going to come at me.
So I got my yoga teacher certification in the pandemic. I did it with a school called Yoga Farm Ithaca out of New York. I did it online and started teaching yoga. I do a lot of private yoga. Was teaching at Holler Brewery for a little bit, like a power class, and then I recently taught an adaptive yoga class for Team Catapult.
Nice. How'd that go?
It was amazing. That was one of the best yoga teaching experiences of my life. It was really challenging because we had all different types of people in there. So visually impaired athletes, amputee, wheelchair, and leading that class. So I had to have different adaptations for everybody. And it was such an inspiring class because the guides worked and they were incredible with their athletes. And I was just so inspired by everyone in that room. They worked so hard through that class. It was awesome.
Yeah. Watching Catapult and their guides, I've had a couple on here. They're amazing people. I mean, just the one to be able to like that be your mission to just help other people, you know, not even like looking at your own goals, but like, hey, I'm going to help someone who obviously has like a disability achieve some goals. Like they're a special group of people for sure.
Oh, they're so wonderful. I had when I was living out east, I ran a few times with deaf runners in New York City through the run clubs, because you know, you don't necessarily need a guide when you're deaf, but when you're somewhere that's high traffic, a lot of people, it helps to run with a hearing person. And then hadn't done that for a long time, moved down here and I met Catapult, and I've never guided with them. I've only taught yoga, but they are an impressive organization and just so committed to their athletes. I've seen a lot of groups nationwide. And they are, I would say, one of the best.
For sure. You know, with all the running and all the new athletic things you do, have you become a running shoe connoisseur?
I have my favorites for sure. I'm still trying to figure out the perfect shoe for me, to be honest. So if anyone's got recommendations, I want to hear it. I kind of go between, I'll wear Hokas for longer distances and I'll wear Brooks. But
what's race shoe that you use? What do you use for race day?
For race day, I did, what did I do this last one? I did the Hoka Mach 6, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like those, but I tend to lose my toenails.
Oh, really? Maybe they're too
so tight. Gross to mention.
Yeah, maybe you need to like size up, maybe half size. Have you gotten to any of the carbon plated shoes yet?
I haven't.
Oh my God. Once you get into that, then just kiss your wallet goodbye, because then you just get like spoiled on how like great these shoes are, and each one is like $250 easy. You know, aside from running, yoga, being a sailor, working in translation, you also play the viola. What do you not do? Well, no, can you still play the viola? I mean, I say that in jest, but can you still play the viola just as good as, I don't know, 6 years ago? Is it like picking up, like riding a bike?
It kind of is. So there's like some things that you just remember. So it's like riding a bike, playing a musical instrument. Yeah, I could pick it up and play it again. I recently went home and had asked my dad, I was like, oh, do you still have my viola from growing up? He had gotten rid of it. And I was like, oh man, because I kind of wanted to pick it up again. But yeah, I played viola from, I started playing when I was 11, I think.
Did you play that like throughout high school and stuff?
I did. Mm-hmm. High school orchestra. I played a little bit in college, and then I just kind of would pick it up when I could.
You ever heard that term like orc dorks?
I have, of course.
I was a band nerd. I was a band geek. So orc dorks and band geeks.
The wildest thing was someone who I was in orchestra with growing up, also in New Jersey, he relocated to Houston, Texas, too. So I was so excited when I moved here. I did have one friend here. Nice. And we connected. It was pretty cool.
The only difference between you and me is I can't read a sheet of music to save my life. I mean, I've never even looked at a sheet of music. So, I mean, I was in drumline, so I could still kind of just like dabble with the sticks. But if you asked me to read like xylophone music or even just like drum, like snare music, I would not know what to. It might take me a while to kind of get on that. Last thing is, you're kind of a traveler, like a little nomad, whenever, you know, whenever you're just like, you know what, I'm going to pick things up and live in a trailer or a truck and just kind of move around. I think you had, let's see, you traveled for 6 months with your family in an Airstream trailer. What year was that in?
2019.
So yeah. Tell me how that came about, because obviously a trailer is small and compact. You don't have the size and room of a house. There's no front yard, backyard. Although like wherever you set up, you could have a huge front yard. But how did you get to the point where you're just like, you know what, I'm going to travel for a little bit?
So, you know, I'll be honest with you. It was kind of out of a lot of frustration of having to be relocated so many times. And we were unsure when we were going to be staying in Texas, and we were in that place of like, okay, well, we had rented an apartment. We wanted to settle and buy a home, but I was like, I cannot do it again. I cannot do it again unless we know we're going to stay. So my husband came home from work one day. I told him I negotiated a great deal on an Airstream trailer in Ohio and asked him if he wanted to do that. And he said it sounded like fun and he was open to it. So we ended up getting the trailer and moving into it for 6 months while we figured out if we're going to stay in Texas. And it was cool because we could stay in a place here in Houston, like rent it, like a lease kind of, you know, like an apartment. And then whenever we would go somewhere, we would just pack up and go. And we just enjoyed it. It was small living, but you learn how to like live with less. And it was a great experience. It was a great experience. And I mean, we took that thing. We went out west, like Rocky Mountain National Park, Moab, Smoky Mountain, and then east to Smoky Mountain National Park. It's seen a lot of places. Yeah.
I love that your husband was like, that sounds cool. Let's do it.
Well, he's super laid back. So, you know, I remember telling my family that's what I was going to do. And they were like, that sounds a little crazy. And I was like, what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't pan out. Like, we'll try it. And when the 6 months, we did it for 6 months, and then we did find out that we would be staying in Texas, and we still have the trailer, so we travel with it, but we moved, you know, into a house.
Do you think Houston is a permanent residence for the time being, or is there always a possibility of y'all moving again?
My hope is we stay in Houston.
Yeah, working. I feel like you're a running fixture in the Houston running community now. Like, you can't go. You're like well established.
Hey, I can't do it. I can't move, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, just be like, you know what?
Don't tell my family back east.
Yeah. So aside from, you know, living in an Airstream trailer for 6 months, what was that? Maybe a year later, a couple years later, you decided to truck. What's the proper word for this? Truck travel?
Oh, the truck camping.
Truck camping.
This
one was just you and your son this time.
Yeah, we, it was the summer before he started kindergarten, and I had a lot of flexibility and decided to pack up, and we truck camped for a little over 3 weeks.
How'd you like that? Because you had not only him, but you had your two dogs with you.
Yes. And it was so fun to just do something like that. Like, we hit the road together. I mean, Hank has been my little sidekick since the day he was born. We've done so many road trips together, so much traveling together, and we would just get in the truck, hit the road. We would picnic places. We would pull into, you know, KOAs usually for camping, because I needed to do something that was a little bit contained because he was only five. And just have, you know, tell little ghost stories and have campfires and go hiking and then just sleep in the back of the pickup truck, you know, in this little makeshift camper thing that we made. And it was super fun.
That's right. Because you said your husband had like made the bed part like decked out, right?
Oh yeah, and it was so comfortable.
You gotta send me a picture of that, because I'm really curious
I meant to do it last night. But yeah, it was really fun. And also it was fun to see Hank do something like that, you know, to watch a kid camp and be out there in the woods and try something new. He's a really, really resilient kid. He just likes to try things, you know. And sorry, it was just a work thing.
No, you're good.
Thank you. Yeah, he's adventurous. And it was super cool that trip, because I noticed we got to see things that were very Texas oriented. We saw Davy Crockett's birthplace in Tennessee, and then Stephen Austin's birthplace in Virginia.
Oh wow.
So I was like,
it was just up and down the East Coast, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went from Texas to New Jersey, and I took the route that went through, like, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and then north through Tennessee, Virginia, and kept going until I hit New Jersey. Then hung out with my family a bit, and then we went back the same route because Hank really likes to hike. So when you hit Virginia, there's a lot of great camping and hiking there.
Was your husband and your family just always like constantly keeping tabs on you, making sure, like, I need your GPS location all the time. You need to check in 9 p.m. every night.
So that trip, I remember my dad was like, you know, my dad is born and raised in New York City. So we never grew up doing any of these types of things. We were very much like city people. And he was just like, I can't believe you're just getting in the truck and like going. And I was like, yeah, it'll be fun. But my husband, he had spent a week climbing Mount Elbert out in Colorado during that trip too, because he only had like a week of time off or something. So he did that. I took Hank out east, and then we reconnected in New Jersey for a minute. But then I drove back by myself with Hank. Yeah.
And then, you know, just kind of really kind of close it down. Like, you know, I met you literally like a couple of weeks ago, although we met through Instagram a couple of years back. But you have to be one of the like the coolest people with such an amazing story that I didn't even expect to like hear. So, I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, everyone goes through different journeys, not even just running, but just in their own personal lives. And just to be able to share that, and for you to even talk about, one, your mom, and then two, just kind of what you had to go through and how that was hard, you know, the procedure you had to go through and how hard it was for you. And then just your amazing journey with the whole running thing. It was a really cool, like, interview overall. And, you know, it's this that I kind of miss whenever I talk to people. And like, I think your interview was kind of like one of the ones I needed to kind of get myself back into this. If people wanted to follow you and connect with you on social media, how would they do that?
So I'm pretty active on Instagram. My handle is at Christine Mulvaney. So, but spelled, you know, Mulvania. So Christine Mulvania, you can find me there. And I'm, yes, yeah, super, super active on there.
I'll definitely like put it in the description of this episode. Christine, I just want to thank you for taking the time in 2 days, because we had to do this over the span of 2 days, for taking time to chat and, you know, obviously be real open and sharing your amazing story.
Thank you.
That, man, even, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to kind of feel for you through this episode.
Well, thank you. And thank you for letting me share it. You know, I think sometimes it's hard because a lot of people, like, they look at me and they're like, oh, they don't expect to know that I live with that type of an endocrine, you know, issue. And I want to be able to tell people, like, hey, no matter what you're facing, don't give up on yourself or don't give up on your goals, you know, things like that.
Yeah. I think with a lot of times we see people through social media and like, man, that's such a cool person, but even still not knowing like their backstory. So I'm so glad you got to share it. And I'm sure it's something that you've wanted to share with, you know, other people, and especially people who go through the same thing.
Sure.
But, you know, hopefully good luck at Philly. I will see you at Chevron and get another finish line cross off the list.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you. And I hope to see you before Chevron. That's something else.
For sure. All right, we'll be in touch.
All right, thank you.